second hour of We the People Radio. For some reason, that was like the shortest 5 minutes ever. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill? Talk to us about Pape Machinery.
Well, you know what, Aaron? They're our sponsor this hour. And Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer.
Thanks,
and
Bill.
Sure, not a problem.
Is there more?
Yes, there is, Aaron.
Okay.
And if you have anything you're looking for in John Deere, give them a call at 530-226-9226. They can do sales, parts, service. They do it all up there. 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or you can catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Aren't you supposed to say Shasta Lake City?
Nah, it's actually... The
city of Shasta Lake.
It's Shasta Lake.
So it's just plain Shasta Lake now?
It's just Shasta Lake, yeah.
Hmm. All right. I was curious about that.
Yeah. Check their post office.
Didn't want you to get in trouble with your...
Their post office says Shasta
your
Lake.
Your town.
Yeah, no.
Oh, it does?
No, yeah. Let me worry about that.
Well, speaking of Shasta Lake, it's looking pretty pathetic.
So yeah, Shasta Lake doesn't have any water. It's like a Shasta pond.
Water management in California is sucky.
Yeah.
Hey, and a little program note. All right, so if you go to the website, don't do it right. Well, you could do it this minute, but it isn't there yet. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will find tabs at the top of the page, like many websites. One of those tabs says pot. And I did a flyover of some of the really big grows up in Siskiyou County on Friday, and got some pretty good footage. I will post that on there probably later on today, but keep an eye for that. The pictures will be changing. So if you still have people that you know that think that marijuana doesn't affect anybody, blah, 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 please go on there and take a look at the pictures. I think you will be blown away at the volume. And next week we have Dr. Finn, who is very, very well known in the anti-marijuana industry. So he will be doing some education for us on next week's program. So and we never did tell you, today is the 24th of July, just in case we replay this show and circumstances in the universe have changed. This is actually the 24th of July, 2022 in real life. And since we're not allowed to see the future, we can't tell you how circumstances may change. Hopefully we won't be talking about the Ukraine war, though. That'd be kind of great. We wouldn't need to replay it because it's over. Back to our guest, William Walter Kay, who lives in Canada. Hey, William, before we get cracking again, what are the people in, I realize you're not in charge of all of Canada, but, you know, what's the prevailing sentiment? I know the government sentiment and the people sentiment might be totally different, but what's the thought process on this whole Ukraine thing up in Canada?
Well, Canada has the distinctive feature of being the largest Ukrainian population outside of Ukraine. That affects it. You see a lot of Ukraine flags driving around people's cars, so there's sort of a Ukrainian bombast. But I've lived here long enough, in fact, all my life, more or less, and I know that the Ukrainian population is deeply divided on these sorts of issues. It's almost 5% of Canadians are Ukrainian.
Oh, wow.
In the prairie provinces where I live, it's definitely over 10%. These are the kids I grew up with on elementary school grounds. You know, I know them quite well. I used to work on railroad gangs in, when I put myself through university, was working on railway gangs. Those were in northern Alberta. And you have towns up there where the people speak Ukrainian on the street. There's towns where they're almost all Ukrainian. So there's a huge Ukrainian population here. But the reality was, and it's a sad reality, that after World War II, Canada became a haven for Ukrainian Nazis. Over 2,000 members of the Ukrainian SS, the Galician SS, were let into Canada. They were given false identifications from the British military intelligence, from the CIA, and they moved in here. And during the Cold War, because of their anti-communist credentials and because they were militant anti-Soviet arguers, they were allowed to more or less dominate many of the key Ukrainian organizations like the Ukrainian-Canadian Congress. And that diaspora, even though they only represent a few percentages of the entire Canadian-Ukrainian population, they often are the spokespeople for the Ukraine. And it gets even more evil than that. The one of the Nazi war criminals that was allowed into Canada was a gentleman by the name of Mikhail Shomiak, and he was the editor of a newspaper in Nazi-occupied Ukraine. He was very pro-genocide. Keep in mind, Ukrainian Nazis killed hundreds of thousands of people, and not just Jews. So over 100,000 people, Polish people, were killed just for being Polish. There was a major ethnic cleansing campaign conducted in Western Ukraine, where Romanians and Bulgarians and particularly Polish people were massacred en masse. And the perpetrators of that, many of them ended up in Canada. And one of the lead propagandists for that campaign, Mikhail Shomiak, reestablished himself in Edmonton, Alberta. And his granddaughter is Christy Freeland, who is our current Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance. And she marched down at the outset of this war, out front of Parliament Hill, with not the Ukrainian flag, the famous blue bar over gold that everyone sees, but with the black over red flag, which was the flag of the Ukrainian Nazi movement. It's the blood and soil flag. She marched with that. This was, I'm talking 4 months ago. She tried to delete the post that she put up about it, but there is someone who's deeply connected to the Ukrainian Nazi movement, and she's the number two person in the Canadian government. And she is seeing, too, that Canada is spending more per capita on this Ukrainian war than the Americans are.
Oh, no kidding.
So that's where we're at in this country. And it's just so rich. You know, these people who are so quick to call other people Nazis.
Yeah.
And there's someone who was marching with a blood and soil flag, which was a Nazi flag for sure. It's a black bar over a red bar. Which glorifies military battalions of the SS that committed ethnic massacres of several different groups of people in Ukraine. And she frequently wears full sort of Ukrainian garb, and there's a video of her leading this chant saying all the glory to Ukraine in Ukrainian, which is like shouting a Zig Heil. So there's that element in the country. And once again, Canada is a place where there is, you know, very little freedom of speech in terms of the mass media. It's very tightly narrowed in Canada. So there's almost no, I haven't come across a single critical article in the mainstream paper, although I must say there's a few things slipping through in CBC, like where they're questioning some of the narrative coming out of the Ukrainian government. But as I pointed out in my most recent article, if you search around, I mean, there are articles, certainly in the British press, where they're revealing the extent of the Ukrainian casualties. There's a good one in the Daily Mail, which is Britain's largest circulation newspaper, and they're clearly saying the Ukrainians are losing 1,000 a day. And that's the article where they talk about enlistment officers, you know, out front of churches grabbing people. And, you know, there's another article where they enlistment officers did a dragnet through Kiev's bars, and they grabbed 300 people in one night. So they're just press ganging people into the front there. So
wow.
Stories about the real, what's really being concealed from people is how badly this war is going for the Ukrainians. That is a big part of the big lie. If you watch Fox News, they got their rent-a-generals coming on there, and they'll always give you the impression that sort of the casualties are more or less equal between the two forces, and that if we just send the Ukrainians more weapons, they can turn this thing around. That's complete nonsense. And, you know, these guys are so confident that they can spin any truth, they can twist any truth. They're so confident that they control the mass media, that they can, whatever disaster it comes in the future, they'll be able to spin it and twist it into something else. I don't think they're going to be able to do this with Ukraine for that much longer. It's going so badly for them on the ground.
Well,
at some point, have
you heard any mainstream media talk about the connection of the Ukrainians and the Nazi Party? I mean, you don't hear anything about that.
That came out in about Christy Freeland, our Deputy Prime Minister. Yeah, that was in one of the main national newspapers.
In Canada.
See, there's a lot in Canada. There's a lot of Jews in Toronto, and they aren't really crazy about having someone march around with a Nazi flag out front of Parliament building who's actually the Deputy Prime Minister and the Finance Minister. She was formerly the Foreign Minister. She is probably more powerful than Justin Trudeau in the federal government. And she is a goose-stepping Nazi as far as a lot of people in Canada are concerned.
Well, it wouldn't go over in the United States either.
She also apparently owns a lot of property in Kiev now.
Yeah. Yeah, that movement would not fly in the United States, and I think that's why your mainstream media is keeping it under wraps.
But that's not their job, so.
I'm triangulating something here. I'm reading some interesting articles. I've long held this suspicion that Volodymyr Zelensky is effectively a hostage of the Ukrainian Nazis inside the Ukrainian military. There were some articles, like he was a peace candidate when he ran for president. To remind, the guy's Jewish, he's a comedian, he's a clown, he was a television celebrity, and then he became the president sort of out of the blue. But he ran a campaign of peace and reconciliation with the Russians. He did not run a campaign of ethnic cleansing. But there were some articles to the effect that as soon as he got elected and he had his first sit-down with the military brass, who at that time were infiltrated wall-to-wall with these hardcore ultra-nationalists, they directly threatened to murder him, to assassinate him if he didn't sort of go with the program. And then he went with the program, and he more or less, he's just been sort of a figurehead. He hasn't been able to really dictate what the army does. Although he's technically the commander-in-chief, he wasn't really in control of it. And then I started noticing that once the war started, he never leaves the country. He sends videos around the world. He sends holograms around the world. I started wondering, is this guy more or less a captive of these people? Because he's a great figurehead. Because of the fact that he's Jewish, it deflects, you know, all this Nazi politics stuff. They always bring it up on the Western media. Well, how could you call them Nazis? They've got a Jewish president, etc.
Right.
And now it gets the intrigue takes a real twist, because then I heard that after he met with Boris Johnson, the British SAS commandos took over his personal security detail. And Bill Gilardi, who's an ex-intelligence dude in the United States, as an aside, Judge Napolitano, or whatever the name is, Judge Napolitano.
Oh, Napolitano, yeah.
Fox.
Uh-huh.
He has an excellent YouTube channel, and he's interviewed Scott Ritter, Colonel Colin McGregor, and Phil Gilardi. All three of those guys are saying exactly what I'm saying in terms of this war is just a massacre of Ukrainians. They're all putting that line out from their point of view. But Gilardi had an article recently, and even though these guys are all former intelligence dudes, they're not inside the loop. They're getting the information from the same place I am, the Internet, primarily. Taking a good look at that, what the Russians are saying. But Gilardi's saying that, once again, that the Americans are taking over, like the CIA types and the security are taking over the private security detail for Zelensky. And I noticed that his wife is traveling around without him, and I'm sure she's telling people this. So it seems to me that there's sort of a changing of the guard occurring. So whereas for a period, Zelensky was effectively a hostage of these far-right ultra-nationalist elements within the Ukrainian military, and that they were sort of telling him what to say and putting him on camera and not allowing him to leave the presidential palace. That is being changed. So now he's more or less in this other bubble of Western intelligence dudes and British commandos who are personally looking after him. I remember there's been coup d'etats in Qatar. There was a coup d'etat in Japan once where they sort of captured the imperial palace. By having control of the emperor, they would say that, you know, the emperor said this, the emperor said that, but it was the guy who took control of the palace, had control of the whole government. Similar things have happened with Biden right now. They got Ron Klain as the chief of staff. Like, if you control access to the president, you can almost control the president. That sort of thing is going on. There seems to be a high-level struggle going on over the control of the Ukrainian government, and it appears that Western intelligence agencies and these elite Western military details are marginalizing the Ukrainians completely, keeping in mind that the Americans, British, and Canadians are almost fully bankrolling the entire Ukrainian government right now.
Right.
You know, Colonel McGregor calls it, you know, the 51st state. They're giving them billions and billions of dollars. They're paying the salaries of the hospital staff. They're paying the salaries of the civil service. They're supplying, in addition to all the military hardware and stuff they're giving them. So they're effectively taking over the government. of Ukraine. And I noticed that a lot of these neo-Nazi battalions have changed their insignia to the Azov battalion, which were formerly flying an SS flag, have changed it. And there was an interesting interview of a Ukrainian POW. You always got to sort of, you always take it with a grain of salt because he's sitting inside a Russian prison telling you this. But that he was in a really hardcore neo-Nazi battalion. They were stationed in Kharkiv. The citizens were protesting their presence, so the Ukrainian army kept moving them around. And then the Ukrainian army took them out to the front line and made them attack a hopeless position, and almost all of them were killed. So it seems to me now that the Ukrainians are marginalizing the Nazis. They know what a liability is. The more the Americans, British, Canadians formally take over the Ukrainian government, the less they want these guys around. And if they're going to be around, they're going to have to change their insignias. They're going to have to cover up their swastika tattoos. They're going to have to be crypto-Nazis, because it's just really bad press. It's unacceptable press.
Yeah, it blows up the messaging like and takes away the pity factor, I'm sure. We have to take a really quick break. We'll come right back. Our guest is William Walter Kay, and you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Transmissions will resume. Now try to push, try to keep us all down, down, and hope that we will never see the truth around. Another promise, another scene, another a package like to keep us trapped in greed. All our green belts wrapped around our minds, and endless red tape to keep the truth confined.
Picking up where we left off. And you were saying.
Yeah, okay. Judge Napolitano. Why do we keep mispronouncing his name? Napolitano.
Yeah, anyway, Napolitano. Kind of like Neapolitan ice cream, only different.
Yeah. One of my favorite ice creams.
Or Napoleon, only different.
One of his guests is this former Lieutenant Colonel McGregor.
Yeah, I like that guy.
And he's in his early 70s now, and he said something rather interesting, which is quite true. You know, he's in his 70s, been in around Washington all these years. He has never seen a president as bellicose and as warmongering as Joe Biden. And he's seen, you know, Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush and all these people come and go. He's never seen anything like this. And there's just a recklessness to this. You will recall the 2016 presidential debates between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And at one point, one of the points of difference was Hillary starts talking about how she wants to put up a no-fly zone over Syria and shoot down Russian aircraft. You know, and Trump saying, well, yeah, I'm not really into that. And even the moderator, George Wallace, started to push back on it. And later on, other members of the intelligence community saying, you know, that's really over the top. Like, you're going to start shooting down Russian aircraft? But she was adamant, and she'd been pushing for that for over a year. And, you know, what do we get? You know, there's this interregnum where we've got Donald Trump in office for 4 years. He goes out, the Democrats get back in, and they're right back at it again. You know, seemingly trying to provoke a full-on war, or at least a conventional war, with Russia. And they all, Pat Buchanan has a good article recently saying, you know, is some sort of war with Russia now inevitable? Because it just doesn't seem like the Biden administration knows where the brake pedal is. It's just giving them more and more weapons that can, you know, have further and further reach. The people they're giving them to, like, they are firing them into Russia. They're firing them into Belarus. They seem to be trying to provoke an even greater response. There's talk now of giving the Ukrainians American fighter aircraft. There's talk of, it was on the judge's show, about there could, may well be Americans dressed in civilian clothes, American servicemen dressed in civilian clothes, firing some of these HIMARS rocket launchers because they're simply too sophisticated to be handed over to someone who doesn't know what they're doing. You have to be trained with them for some time. But that is definitely crossing a line.
Yeah.
You can get shot through the forehead if you're fighting in a war dressed as a civilian. You are not at all protected by the Geneva Convention if you're adopting civilian clothing. If you're wearing a military uniform with proper insignia, then you've got a right to prisoner of war status. You've got certain rights as a combatant. So it appears as though there's already Americans in the field firing weaponry, operating under some sort of cover of some sort of agency or private entity. But that is a major war crime, and they're certainly putting people at risk. There's a lot of American mercenaries over there now who do not have cover of the Geneva Convention. There's three Brits that are about to get the firing squad that have been captured. There's a number of Americans who have been captured, mercenaries, and they are probably going to be facing a firing squad. And I don't know how the media is going to process that information. But back to, you know, Biden and the Democrats, you know, this is just such a reckless, warmongering program that they seem just to be determined to push forward with.
Yeah, I just wonder how much more the American people will put up with. I mean, sending billions of dollars in weapons and aid to a cause that is, I don't know, marginal. When we have so many problems here that need attention, and we're dumping all this money into Ukraine, it's, I just don't think it's going over too well, and I don't know how much longer.
$40 billion. I've seen the figure $60 billion. Well, the scary thing is back to you know, after the last election, and we're not going to get into how corrupt it was or wasn't. There was this great fear in the media that Trump was going to start a war. Trump, you know, after the election, but before January, that Trump was going to start bombing Iran. Trump was going to start doing something crazy. And there was almost a quasi-military coup happened because General Mark Milley was having meetings. We're saying, you know, we got to make sure that Trump doesn't have his finger on the button. But there was this concern that because Trump was on the way out the door, that he might start something, he might do something, you know, really off the wall like that. That's the scenario you're looking at now.
Yeah.
You can see the tea leaves. It looks like the Democrats are in for a major drubbing at the polls, and they deserve it, but you're still stuck with, you know, the dotard-in-chief as the commander-in-chief. And what is stopping them from dramatically escalating this situation? There's a few other opportunities for them to really starting a full-blown war.
Oh, yeah, it's not far. Yeah, it's not far away, and I think we're definitely walking a tightrope when it comes to that. But I don't think there's too many people on this side of the border that believe Joe Biden is calling the shots. That guy is definitely a figurehead at this point.
Then who is calling the shots?
Great question.
I think it's all Obama's former guys.
Yeah, it could very well be.
You know, they've taken it offline, but if you go, they used to be able to, when you go to the National Security Council website, they had this 100-page history of the National Security Council, and it was such a good read. They've taken it off now, but effectively, you know, presidents have never really been in control of foreign policy. It's always been the National Security Council, at least since 1947. But that just codified what had already been in effect for some time. The president couldn't execute a foreign policy unless the Secretary of the State was fully cooperative, unless the Secretary of the Navy, you know, wasn't dragging his feet. So he really needed that team to be working together properly. And that's been codified in the NSC. So I spent the other day just, I went to the National Security Council, I got the list of all the people who are currently members of it, you know, Jake Sullivan and General Mark Milley.
What a joke.
He's someone who's in charge.
Yeah.
That Bill Burns, the head of the CIA, seems to know what, you know, there's some people there you can tell are marginalized peripheral people. And this is the way it is with every National Security Council.
Right.
There's usually characters like Donald Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney that are frequently more influential than the actual president. Once they get around a table, some of them are sort of running the show, and it isn't always the president. So I was sort of looking at this list, and I think it's, and there's Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor, Mark Milley, and he's just a real jarhead, too.
Oh, yeah.
One of these guys, you know, intergenerational, brass helmet dude, right? And I don't know really, you know, where his head is at. You can't really tell. There's also Lloyd Austin. He's the first African-American Secretary of Defense. But same sort of thing. These guys went into the military when they were teenagers, been there their whole life. He left, Austin left, worked for Raytheon for a while. He's not rich, but all his money seems to be tied up with the military defense contractors and what have you. I'm sure they all have those sorts of investments.
Well, the good thing is they are getting all the pronouns straightened out and, you know, all that sort of thing in our military.
And make sure you have uniforms for pregnant men.
Yeah, and, you know.
Just, that's super important.
Yeah, we're going to be cutting edge on that if anything does break out. I mean, have no fear.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a stark contrast with Russia. You know,
oh, gosh.
Banned all gay propaganda in Russia, which I support that. You know, you have a right to be gay. You know, the government shouldn't be interfering in this. But let's not pretend that there isn't, you know, promotion of these sorts of things through the mass media big time. But
let's not pretend it doesn't mess up our military and our mission.
Yeah.
You can guarantee it's not happening in the Russian military.
Yes. No.
That sort of nonsense. But back to, you know, who is, you know, you say, if it isn't Joe Biden who...
Well,
you know,
you got Susan Rice.
You
don't
have to say yes or no. It would have to be members of the National Security Council. There's Janet Yellen. There's that Ron Klein guy who's the head of it. He's the chief of staff. And that position can carry a lot of power if you really control access to the president. I think Jill Biden and Hunter Biden, these people are still involved. Like they're almost like a crime family. You know, you have to create sort of a new sort of list of people. Joe Biden would be one of them. Ultimately, it is he who says yes or no to these sorts of things. But it is what influences are upon him.
I really don't think he is the yes or no guy. I really don't. He's too, I don't know, I don't want to say demented, but he's mentally not there. I think they tell him what to say. They put it on a card, and they tell him what to say.
And
they
if it
make
says,
the
repeat
policy.
The line, he says, repeat the line. Don't just repeat the line. Say repeat the line.
You can't even do that.
No. And so
I put together a one-minute photo walk.
No, it's kind of like it's like a Monty Python skit.
Yeah, and so there's no way this guy is calling foreign policy military type decisions.
His signature. You know, they're the people, someone's holding his hand and writing Joe Biden.
Yeah, yeah.
On it. It's still his signature. One thing about, you know, being the U.S. president is because there are so many things on their plate. Like Ukraine, Russia isn't the only foreign policy thing. They've got, you know, Israel, the Middle East, they've got Iran, they've got China, Taiwan. You know, you would really have to read 80, 90 hours a week to be on the ball with this. And you know he isn't doing that.
No.
You know, whatever he hears about Ukraine, he's getting these brief briefings. He's probably being told the same nonsense that the war is more or less going not too bad for the Ukrainians and that the Russians are suffering these enormous casualties. These are just lies. Biden might be being told these lies.
Well, I think he could very possibly be one of the first presidents we've ever had that isn't getting briefings. He's just being told what to say, and they're shuffling him off to the next campaign stop or whatever. But I seriously doubt he is making any foreign policy.
Well, the frightening part is we're letting him go there and talk to people.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
It is embarrassing. Well,
I always think, as mentally, you know, problematic as he is, he's also doing all this jet setting around the world.
Yep.
There's no way that he is on the ball. Like, I've been trying to sort of stay on top of the Russo-Ukrainian war, and you've got to put at least 2 hours a day of reading to really sort of be sort of half on the ball.
Right.
And I just know that he isn't doing that. So all this, whatever information he's getting is going to be very perfunctory, and he must be getting it from Milley and from Burns, but there's got to be a clique within the National Security Council that are, in fact, running the show and are advancing this agenda. And it seems to be sort of, I would say, Mark Milley, Lloyd Austin, you know, also the National Security Council statutory member, Kamala Harris. And, you know, she is not in the loop.
We won't even get into the problematic speeches there. Those have become their own. She's got her own section in the history of memes now, just clips from her speeches. Oh, my God. Oh, let's take a break just a wee bit early here, sure. a whole 30 seconds, because I did find the perfect Austin Milley song, and I thought we should just do that just to lighten the mood a wee bit, and then we'll be back with our guest, William Walter Kay. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Good job, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
Temptations were onto something. William, what have we neglected to mention since we have 15 minutes left about?
Well, ultimately, and at risk of boring people.
At the risk of what?
I think the problem that the Americans, and not just the Americans, because the Canadians are deeply integrated into this, as are the British, it really comes down to, you know, the military-industrial complex, and it comes down to those who do benefit from this. And they are, you know, I encourage every American to go back and listen to Dwight Eisenhower's farewell address, you know, January 17th, 1961, 2 months after I was born. And he just warns American to keep an eye on the defense industry. They're going to have a built-in desire to influence foreign policy. They're going to want wars and threats of wars and revivals of the Cold War and things like that. He didn't say that, but he basically said they're going to pursue unwarranted influence on the government. And I have to point the finger at them again and again. They are a powerful, organized lobby. There's an excellent website called Open Secrets. It's quoted by a lot of mainstream media from time to time when it serves their interests. But they do a lot of work on how much various industries pay in lobbying and how much they donate to politicians. And the defense industry is highly organized. They spend, you know, a couple hundred million dollars a year in lobbying and paying to Congress. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think there's 2.8 million Americans work for the Department of Defense in one capacity or another. I think there's over 800,000 people who work in the defense industry. And in some ways, you know, if you look at people like Milley and Austin, that it's just a big grift. If America really was concerned just about defending the homeland, you know, if they really only had to worry about Cuba and Venezuela, you wouldn't be spending over $800 billion a year on military hardware. And there's a tremendous overinvestment that's going on in defense industries. It is only going to happen if they can drum up these threats like Russia and China. It has to be a giant country that actually has a formidable armed forces. So there's a built-in tendency to antagonize relations with those countries as a way to continue bilking the American taxpayer for just enormous amounts of money. And it's so integrated into the American economy. I saw a 2016 study. It was actually done by MIT, and they should know because they're beneficiaries from it. But it was like $75 billion a year. This is 2016. Of the Defense Department budget goes to research and development. And that was well over half of all of the government-funded research and development in the United States. And so a lot of universities are collecting this as well, and they are also into it. There's also all kinds of, you know, civilian spin-offs. And this is what Donald Rumsfeld was all about. You know, let's have these wars. It's a way to put enormous amounts of money into research and development, because this will eventually make its way into the civilian market, and this will benefit the entire American economy. There's entire industries like jet engines and computers and radar. The internet came out of the military. You know, civilian nuclear power. There's all these industries that spin off it. So there are people, like the real jarheads like Milley, et cetera, think that they're doing America a favor by having these $800 billion defense contracts, because they say it's a way to subsidize research and development. Foreign commercial military sales are a huge industry that benefits the American economy. And these civilian spinoffs are actually a core part of American industry, of American economic success. So I think deep within the deep state, there is a belief that it's in the best interest of America to keep fomenting wars and rumors of wars and generating hostile relations with other countries unnecessarily as a mechanism of keeping the gravy train going. But ultimately, it's a grift. And, you know, the old saying is, if you don't know who the sucker in the room is, it's you. And American taxpayers are being conned. Like, there's no reason you should have this kind of hostile relations with Russia. And, you know, if you ask the average American citizen in Muncie, Indiana, whether he thought that the Donetsk Oblast should be part of Russia or the Ukraine, they wouldn't know what you were talking about.
Right.
You don't have a dog in this race. From my point of view, they did have some sort of a referendum. You know, those places, if they want to leave Ukraine, it's an internal matter. This isn't something that we should be fighting for. This isn't something we should be paying for. We should be avoiding these kind of foreign entanglements. Canada doesn't have the Republican tradition that the Americans did. But, you know, the founding fathers, like Washington, said, they were quite clear, like, don't get entangled in, you know, other countries' problems. They were not in favor of these large standing armies. They thought that was a European disease. It didn't want that. They thought the defense of the country would be primarily through militias and national guards and things to that effect. They knew the problem of massive standing armies. You know, they said there's nothing worse than a police force looking for something to do. You know, they'll cause problems. And I think that ultimately is the root of it. You've got millions of Americans whose bread and butter is the defense industry or defense contracting jobs. You're working for the Army. There's a lot of congressmen who are completely swallowed up by this. You've got this war party, this forever war party. And there was a brief and shining moment in 2016 that sort of carried, it was a Tea Party. You guys were involved in this. It was the wave that really carried Trump to office. And people were talking about forever wars. And they were tired of these things in Afghanistan, Iraq, these wars that never ended. But
yeah,
on the other side of the barricade, go ahead.
Yeah, well, now we've transferred that from boots on the ground to just sending arms and money to foreign countries in massive amounts to keep the conflict going. It's kind of a different a strategy, but it's the amount of money we're spending on this is mind-boggling, and here we are.
It's criminal.
Yeah.
It could be spent domestically. It could be spent on
Absolutely.
Irrigation and hydroelectricity and roads and bridges and all sorts of other things. It's a huge waste of money. Like, so much of this military hardware never gets used. They build it, and they've got these boneyards of planes, what have you, to sit there. It's a huge waste of money. Yeah, really, the change has to come, and I'm the last person to be quoting the Bible, but the change has to, it's, what is it, Isaiah, I even wrote it down, see if I can find it. Isaiah, it's a Sunday, I can quote the Bible.
Yep.
Isaiah, book 2, chapter 4. And ye shall judge among the nations, and ye shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and they shall turn their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift sword against nation, nor shall they study war anymore. That's what the Americans have to do. You have to redirect the military-industrial complex, which are, they're geniuses in terms of engineering. But they don't have to be building weapons. They could be building, hydroelectric dams and a variety of other very useful pieces of infrastructure. You could have 3 million people really building up the wealth of America, and you're not doing that. You're just dumping all that wealth into the ocean right now.
Yeah.
But
no,
getting anywhere near.
Yeah, I totally believe that we need a standing army for self-defense. I mean, we have to have a strong defense, but that doesn't include arming these other countries to the teeth and sending billions of dollars to support governments that can't stand on their own. That has nothing to do with us.
The only reason they can stand on their own is because the media says they can. But the numbers are not bearing that out.
No.
And I think they also sold it like, well, if the Russians take over Ukraine, they're going to go through everybody else, then we all will be in a war. That was the kind of the premise that, I don't know if that's kind of gone away, though, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Poland will be next, and then it'll
It's nonsense. It's nonsense. The European Union collectively have over 2,000 fighter jets. France is a nuclear power. They've got over 600 nuclear bombs. The Europeans want the Americans to do all the fighting and to pay for all the fighting. The Americans are being sort of led around by the nose, by the Europeans, by the oil monarchies, by Israel, by Taiwan, and all those countries there. Those countries should be paying for their own defense. They should be, bolstering their own defenses
and
fighting their own battles. The Ukrainians should be fighting their own battles.
Yeah, it's
There's
funny.
No reason why the Anglo-American states should be sticking our noses into this and spending, unconscionable amounts of money. And there's a real blowback that's happening. Those countries, like the Arab monarchies, they have a lot of influence in Washington. Countries like, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, they are also lobbying Washington. Israel, famously, it lobbies Washington to get more free weapons and what have you. So it is a blowback where those countries are having more influence on Washington than the American people are. It's almost like it isn't even your military anymore.
Right. Yeah,
RoboCop.
Yeah, and it definitely has an effect on what we're seeing now as far as inflation. You can't print this much money and just ship it all over the world and not have ramifications, and we are suffering from that big time right now.
Well, and for the people who may not have caught it, the show we did with you July 10th, so just a couple of weeks ago, Climate Change and European Cultural Imperialism. Tell you what, if you haven't read that article, if you don't have time to listen to the show, that's fine. But read Williams' article on that page. It's really, really good, and I think it's a point to ponder as we go through all this, because here we've got so much money going overseas, and yet they've decided our biggest crisis now is going to be global warming again.
Yeah.
It's coming back.
Yeah, climate change.
Yeah.
Now it's front
and
center.
Is it global warming or is it climate change or is it both? Have we gotten rid of global warming? We done with that now?
They're both coterminous. There's a myth within the skeptic community that it was called global warming and they changed it to climate change. But the International Panel of Climate Change was formed in 1988. So the two terms have always coexisted. One of the primary documents, The Politics of Climate Change, was written by one of the architects of this, and that was back in the 1970s when they were fighting global cooling. So the term climate change as a political campaign slogan dates to the mid-1970s, but for the longest time, the media used the term global warming. But the reality is both of those terms sort of came around together.
Yeah.
Well, it's
global
kind of
warming, climate change.
It's kind of interesting though, because if they want this to be, you know, a really primary focus, it's just very interesting how this whole big war and the money and all of that, but at the same time, they're yapping on about climate change and then messing up policy over here based on that. It just seems like, okay, either the war isn't really a big deal or isn't a priority, or you're just trying to distract us, or both. Hard to say.
Well, from a sociological point of view, the key concept is complex. Like as in military-industrial complex, as in the climate-industrial complex. Priceless book, Bertram Gross, 1980, Friendly Fascism was the name of the book. Guy who spent 40 years in Washington, D.C., these various bureaucracies. But he spends a lot of time really thinking about what is a complex, like what is an industrial complex. He calls them spider webs without spiders. They are definitely the dinosaurs that stalk the land right now. We are just these little lemmings running around in the leaves. But these industrial complex, like the climate industrial complex now, the wind power industry, the solar power industry, the electric vehicle industry, the biofuels industries, these are all lobbying the government. There isn't one central agency in control of them, but there's this massive organizational momentum. You saw it during COVID. I wrote an article called The Pharmaceutical Industrial Complex. Because, you know, these big pharmaceutical companies had basically, for at least a year or so, had captured government. And they were just looting the public treasury. We spent $1 trillion on vaccines that didn't work for people that didn't need to take them. So that's an example of a complex, a coordinated group of businesses and government agencies sort of systematically looting the public treasury. And that's what we have now is the climate industrial complex is still around, but the military industrial complex, they want to eat too. So it's like a bunch of hungry wolves going after an elk carcass or something.
But yeah.
The modern world is dominated by these industrial complexes. There's many of them. And what we're seeing now in the Ukraine is the military-industrial complex, and it's not exclusively an American thing. There's a bunch of Canadian companies and government agencies and military bureaucracies integrated into this.
We have hit the wall.
Top of the hour.
Yes, the end of the thing. So we will talk to you again soon. I'm sure we'll speak.
You know, the thing.
Okay.
Yeah, we will be back with you on a different day. You can
Thanks,
find
William.
Our shows with William
okay.
at wethepeopleradio.us.
No rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees.